My name's Tarek. I am an addict. It's my pleasure this evening to introduce our speaker. And for all of us who spend time on this path, we will have people that imprint on our spirit and our soul and our heart, and they become a part of our DNA. There's a man sitting in the back of this room. His name is Dante R. He will always be carried with me, and he will always be a part of my DNA. There were these gentlemen, Mark Houston, Joe Hawk, Don Pritz, all channeled through a man named Scott Jackson that was my teacher for 7.5 years. And they will always be a part of my DNA. The way I embody that message is transforming because of a man I've been with for the last 7 years almost, who's softened me, who's shortened the distance between my mind and my heart. And these men will always be a part of me. And in my drive after picking up Sydney, we start to see these connections that we have in this language of the heart. And it was such a beautiful conversation that we had coming up to the monastery. But the first time I heard this woman speak, the theme of her talk was the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm a person who believes the struggle that we have is sacred. The trials and low spots are a pathway. It's a wounding, but through that wound, God emerges. And that's what I heard that night in your talk. And the minute I heard you that night, I was like, she's coming to speak the language of the heart. And with that, I give you Sydney. You guys are in for a treat.
An old dope head, huh? You just start scratching. You know what I mean? It's like, ooh. My name is Sydney, and I am an alcoholic. And let me just take a few minutes to just settle in. You know, it's good to be here. And it's good to be here with you all. And just have to ask you to check yourself for a second. Do you remember what 8:30 on a Saturday used to be like? Can you recall? How painful. Tired. Right? Toe up. You know, and the night was just starting. Because didn't it start at 10:30, or did you just keep rolling in like me from Thursday after work? This was all from Thursday after work. This train keeps rolling till Monday about 7:30. And just tired. But really just having to be there with you all, right? And already lost the keys, already had a car accident, already switched off from him to her or another him. And you know, a beer was now gone, you know, Chateau LaSalle and all that stuff is, you know, now we're just crying, you know, we're just trying to get it done, and you know, drinking ceased to be a luxury pretty much from the moment I started, right? I want to tell you some things about me, tell you some things about this program, and share with you my experience, strength, and hope. In the deepest desire and warmest invitation for you to find your own path. You know, Kent and Ralph are incredible gentlemen. Gentlemen, real men to follow and sisterhood with during a weekend like this. But I have to tell you, there's something so incredibly moving to be considered with them. But I'm just gonna have to go head on and do this because this is what sisters do. My sobriety date is January 12th, 1985. I'm just saying. And also, before I jump on off into everything, I just have to say one thing because it's important. Are we ready? To my ladies, how y'all doing out there? Ooh, I get so tired of these men carrying this message. Oh my God. Woo! I love them. They've helped me stay alive. I'm tired of them. Oh. I want to say a few things. I am not grateful to be an alcoholic. I'm not happy to be one. I think that's crazy when people get up here and say, "Ooh, I'm happy to be an alcoholic." It's like saying, "Ooh, I'm happy to have cancer. I'm happy to have multiple sclerosis. I'm happy to be cross-eyed." I guess this is going to be the good, the bad, and the ugly too, Tarek, sir. What I'm so grateful for, what my cup runneth over for, that I can move to tears and feel the movement in my heart about, is I'm grateful to know that I am one. I'm grateful to have conceded to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic the same exact way that I know the color of my eyes. That kind of knowing. I ain't tripping. I ain't tripping about being an alcoholic or an addict, or you all thinking I'm one, or can you know, does she know the book, and where she been, and who sponsored her, and what's she doing, where she go to meetings, and is she gonna give a good talk or not, and is she like Delana, and how, you know, and all that. Alcohol and cocaine tore my ass up. I came to you all in an internal collapse, the dead walking. I had nothing to live for, and I could not understand while I was still alive. When I came to, I used to say, "Fuck, I have to do this again. I'm not your girl who sat up here and drank to feel the love of the room. I didn't, oh Lord, please stop talking. If we together, why do we need to make, when I drink and have my cocaine and amphetamine, I have everything I need. That's who I am. I actually hate people." Yeah, I'm not like Ralph. And I want to thank Tarek for getting me out here and inviting me out here. And that drive up was really special to me. And I don't know you, but I am grateful to know that you're here slinging a message of depth and weight. And hey. I went to my very first meeting when I was 14 years old, and I got sober 5 years later. There was somebody who was 19 in the room. I came in when I was 19. I have stayed for the same exact reason that I'm here with you today, knowing full well there is no place else I'd rather be than right here with you. I didn't want the life I had. That internal collapse, that absolutely being bankrupt, 19 years old, and not a shred of hope, not a desire, not a light, not a dream. Do you know what it's like to be a young person without a dream? You see, Ralph and I grew up around the same place, but we didn't grow up the same way. I didn't have six brothers. I had one, and I have scars all over my body from him. I grew up with a single mom. She didn't go to church. She didn't have a beautiful saying out to God. She would cry. She would get high. She would get beat up. She would go to work, and I would take care of her. I had been parenting from the time I could remember, cleaning house, cooking, doing all those things, right? And when I came here to you, you know, I had three emotions, rage, boredom, and rage. And when the very first woman came to me at Felicity House on a Wednesday night at 7:30, she came right up to me and she said, "Sydney, we have been waiting for you. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. You are absolutely beautiful, and we are so happy to have you here." And I said, "Fuck you. Get away from me." Now be careful, my friends, who you are when you come in. That's all you get to sponsor. So if you're new, you can soften up quick, trust and believe. Later on from here, like, ooh, I get nothing but feral cats. That's all I get. Scratching and biting and clawing and peeing on everything. That's all I get. That's all I get. And I'm grateful. I was 19 years old when I came here in my first year of sobriety. I had auditory hallucinations, and they sent me to therapy twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays for 2 hours. She was a woman from Chicago named Eleanor, and she had 40 years of sobriety. She was in her 60s. And I have been spoon-fed this program. I have been given hours and hours and hours of people's time. I have been tolerated. I have been corrected and encouraged. I have been cursed at. And I have been shook to the core of my being by attention and affection. See, when we talk about the language of the heart, it's actually a term that Bill Wilson used to describe Dr. Silkworth, the way that he spoke to him. See, Bill was, he was raggedy, and he had been coming in and out of that hospital, messing up, messing up, messing up. And it made no sense to anybody. Why? Because clearly the cat was charismatic, had some skills, was talented, like you. You are not broken. You are not effed up. You are none of those things. And see, what you all told me when I came in is, if this is not psychology, this is not group therapy, this is not self-help, and I am grateful. I am grateful that they did not diagnose me. I am grateful that they told me, hey, you can have a life beyond your wildest dreams. But in order to do that, Sydney, you must die unto yourself and every single thing that is driving you. And honey, we don't talk like you. We don't want what you have. You are absolutely out of your mind because you do not know who you are, whose you are, what you believe in, what you're willing to die for, nor who your friends are. And you suffer. So when Bill came up with this term, language of the heart, he was talking about the way in which Dr. Silkworth spoke to him that kept him coming back for a remedy, for a treatment that he knew and Dr. Silkworth knew wasn't yet possible. Do you want to stop for a second and think about that? They knew it wasn't yet possible. But the way Dr. Silkworth spoke to him, kept him in the game. It is a language of healing. Yes, it's storytelling, but it is a way in which it's a transmission, like the highest Tibetan monks transmitting a spiritual message that moves in the heart that then actually changes perception through hope. Ooh, you don't know where you belong and who you belong to. This thing is, for me, about a conversion experience. It is, for me, about a transformation. It is, for me, about liberation. And the only way I could get it was this internal collapse, this inability to get from A to B, this inability to make a connection. You remember having that feeling like everyone in the room had read a book and you only got chapter 7 and chapter 22. You know, I suffer from alcoholism. I don't say alcoholic addict because that would be like saying my name is Sydney Sydney. I'm not going to sit up here and shout out CA. I love CA. I love Cocaine Anonymous. I loved cocaine. But you know what? Part of who we are has really nothing to do with who we are. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, a 19-year-old girl, in 1985. And Cocaine Anonymous had just started in Los Angeles. And they weren't gonna send a fine young thing like myself to all you hooligans. So they sat me up in AA with all the old folks. I wish I wasn't being recorded. I'd get some, and I tore their ass. Desperate people do desperate things. Hurt people hurt people. Scared people scare people, right? Healed people heal people. I have nothing to offer you. I had nothing to offer you. I was 19 years old, had raised myself, was trying to keep a mother alive, keep a brother off me. I started work at 15. I had to pay rent. I had to pay rent and all that. What? We're not going to talk about how wrong it was. We're just going to talk about the cards that were dealt. I believe that women drink and use differently than men. It says so in our book. I believe that it's been my experience of the men and the women who've asked me to sponsor them, that there's a way that we suffer on the body that is so damaging and so difficult to come back from. And when you're young and that body is being hurt, there's a way that developmentally you don't get what Ralph got, or maybe what some of you got, and that's okay. What isn't okay is that I hold Sydney responsible for that. I am responsible for it. In other words, you have taught me how to respond appropriately to it, but I am not responsible. And as sometimes I hear us talk about our early time with alcohol, it's kind of like a badge of honor. It's kind of like, you know, a John Wayne, John Wick kind of dude bravado. You know, like a Cardi B. And I'm here, if you're that person in the room, that it's not. I was like, anybody used to play pinball? You pulled that, and it reactivity. There was an absence of thinking. It was survival. This is less painful than this. This is less dangerous than this. This. There was no thinking. And I am here to tell you, for me, for this alcoholic addict, alcohol saved my life. Alcohol is not my problem. It never has been my problem. It still isn't my problem. It is a symptom of a greater disease. But please don't sit up here and badmouth alcohol. And oh, let's not talk about that sweet, sweet, sweet combination of alcohol and cocaine. You know that one that just goes zzzz. Alcohol, drugs made me 10 feet tall and bulletproof. 10 feet tall and bulletproof. I'm not giving that up. What do you have to offer that's going to protect me? That's going to give me a sense of ease and comfort and protection? That's going to give me the courage to stand up to that dude, walk out there, do all. I sit here today and understand I needed help. I needed guidance. I was a kid, but I was a smart kid. And that boomerang, have you all identified your boomerang? That one that Bill throws speculation and drink, the one that turned around and cut him to shreds? You know what speculation is, right? Do they know what speculation is? He's the one who would go to Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey and say, hey, this thing, AI, it's getting ready to be the next rise. Why don't you kick down 2.5 million right here and you'll see. Everybody was all up in his ass. Because he had this, we call it in French, a pif. He had this nose to see where the next great rise was. And you throw that with drink and he was just like, oh yeah, yeah, right? My boomerang was alcohol and this ability to read a room, to know who needed what, know how they needed it, change like that chameleon, give them everything they want, put them in pause, go ahead, do something else, come back, do this. I could see exactly what was going on wrong and immediately bring what was needed there to fix it. And that kept the promises of this program away from me. Not because I didn't want them, not because of bad sponsorship, not because I didn't have this method, not because of Joe, none of those things. It's because as a young alcoholic, it takes time to develop. It takes time to be able to avail yourself of Ralph's message and Kent's message. It also takes time to run out all this energy in the body. Self-will, hell no, we supposed to be doing something. We supposed to be accomplished, but we supposed to be going somewhere. You do, I love Leslie. Go do it, do it, do it. Right? Because when you suffer an internal collapse very, very young, wherever that thing is that stopped you, 8, that's the maturity level you have. That's the skill set you have. That's the IQ you have, that's the emotional intelligence, 8. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was trying so hard to grow up emotionally just to get to 16. So, a little suffering, a little freedom, a lot of suffering, a lot of freedom. I ain't deep, I just suffered a whole bunch before I got to you. Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a life worth dying for. When I came to you, all I wanted to do was die. There's so many stories to tell you. This beautiful thing about stories is so cool. Ah. I'll share this. How many people are less than a year sober? Right on. Right on. And of those people, how many of this is your first time getting sober? That's right. That's right. And the most courageous thing is you being right here with us. You know what I mean? That keep coming back is so true. You know, bring the body and the mind will follow. So let me just dive in. I've only got a little bit of time. I was belligerent, obstinate. I have all these notes everywhere. And here, you ready? Belligerence, cynical, prejudiced, defensive, intolerant. Violence in my mind, superiority, entitled. Do not want to take care of myself. Don't think I should have to. Think I'm the only person who suffers. Self-obsessed, jealousy, sarcasm, pleasure-seeking, greedy, lazy, controlling, abrasive, hostile, dishonest by omission. My character defects, we were talking about character defects. I'm as powerless over them as I am over alcohol, but I want you to know that I dig them. I buy them shoes and purses and matching handbags. I got a couple of that have lingered for the year. I just go, baby, what you want? where you want to go? Because I understand that thing that gets you to the party. Remember that boomerang? It's the boomerang. That thing that gets you to the party, the thing that keeps you alive, is the thing that will kill you here. Right? And just like I'm not happy to be an alcoholic, I'm not happy about any of that. But it is attention and interest that will heal me. It is tenderness that's going to heal me. Not more judgment, more criticism. It's taken me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to know that. Ooh, I gotta settle down. There's so many things. So many things. You know, retreats like this really open me up. I become so moved and so pensive and so thoughtful, so saturated with not only that all my needs are deep, all my needs are deep. But I am absolutely floored at the magnitude of the miracle of healing that I am. See, I don't really care about any of you. I learned so early on never to compare myself to you. Never. I tap myself on the shoulder and look at from how far I've come. I sit down in morning meditation and I say, I keep these little notes in my 24-hour book in my language of letting go, and I write down, you know, for decades, things that I thought that I'd never ever be able to recover from, be healed from, be able to have an intuitive inclination and wisdom around, and I, you know, connect with those sometimes in the morning as I'm reading this day's reading, and I think, wow, I thought that was going to crush me, and here I am. Here God has brought me. Alcoholics Anonymous is a microcosm of America. Let's not get it twisted. Not so cool things have happened in my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can remember one of the home, my first home group, it was a young person's home group, and there was this woman, I'll leave her out because she's still alive, I'm still sober. She sponsored all of my friends, and I was the only one in the room, and I started calling her because I needed a sponsor. And I kept calling her. And about the fifth day, she says, "Oh, Sydney, I don't sponsor black girls." Now, let me tell you what Alcoholics Anonymous has done for me. I went to Eleanor, and Eleanor was white. And I tore up everything in her office, that feral cat. I was screaming, I was writhing, I was going insane. And she looked at me and she said, "Hey, this is the best thing to ever happen to you. Let me sit down and tell you why. You, Sydney, are going to have to sit in your spiritual seat harder, deeper, more sure than any other woman, maybe in Alcoholics Anonymous, definitely in your home group." She says, "Don't ever trust another human being to let you know what God has in store for you. Listen, accept where things are right, but always know this is about you and God. It always will be. So here we go, Sid. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." There was another time when I had gone to work. That was my first year of sobriety. My father died in my first year of sobriety. We could talk about something really beautiful. But there was another time I had gone to work, and you know, I got called all kinds of names. I was always very good at what I did, highly organized, you know, kind of articulate. I'm a little heavy, I know. You know, I got some skills. Got a couple different degrees. I speak a couple of languages, you know. And look like this, you know. I've always been this size, this, you know, pounds lighter, but you know. Used to have hair all down, you know. And you know, that word was flying around. And I remember calling my sponsor at the time and saying, and I was in the middle of my fourth step. And she said, "Sydney, please finish your fourth step." And I'm screaming about how they treated me. I'm screaming about how they talked to me. I'm screaming about the funny vibe. I'm screaming about the injustice. I'm screaming about the historical, blah, blah, blah. And she said, "Sydney, you are insane. When are you going to realize you are nowhere in Alcoholics Anonymous until you finish your fourth step? You will always be insane, they will always dominate you, and you will have nothing. Finish your fourth step." Bam! And she hung up. Now, one of the things I have to tell you is, the people who have spoon-fed me this program in Alcoholics Anonymous never cared if I liked them and never sought my approval. Please, please, you guys, quit fucking liking your sponsees. Just sponsor them. Just sponsor them. These people didn't care what I thought of them. They knew I was young. They believed in a mighty force, a life force that could bring alcoholics back, addicts back from the brinks of insanity and death. They knew this was going to be a long life unless I had a solution, unless I was armed with facts about myself and this disease. Not opinions, not preferences, not sentiment. Just a cold-blooded question. How many are running your life right now on sentiment? Sentiment, my people. You know what sentiment is? You got a thought, a belief about something you ain't never experienced, ain't got no facts, it's just your feeling. My mind is feeling something about it. That's as bad as being high and driving. They used to tell me feelings aren't facts. They used to tell me feelings are only one-third of anything you got. And they said I was trapped in the past. They said that resentment was the number one offender and that I was trapped in the past. They didn't care. They only believed in this. You know, I love to hear Kent and Ralph talk. I feel like they have a softer version. You remember when Sears used to say, "Come to the softer side." Well, I say I'm a prejudice and I'm bigoted. I only do the black parts in the book. That's all I do. I don't try to find the loopholes. I don't look for interpretations. You know, I'm going to have some lunch, some breakfast, some something with Ralph. We're going to have to talk about some stuff he said up here about, you know, it's just it ain't no interpretation. What you talking about? Right? This process of going through the big book word by word, line by line, turning statements into questions, trying to ask myself, did I drink like Bill, think like Bill, feel like Bill? Did I have these kinds of movements of the mind? Was the single greatest thing that ever happened to me as a young individual dying of terminal uniqueness? Seeing in that first 8 pages, highlighting, did I have any kind of thing like he did? It saved me, because if I was like Bill, guess what else? The promises would come alive for me. I was 19 years sober before I came to this way of doing the work, and that is as it should be. Because I came up in AA with folks who were our big book. I wish you could have known Don Norman. I wish you could have known Bobby Earle. I wish you could have known Don Madden and Alabama and Claire Selden and Salt Cubby. Jack Kissel was this big Jewish cat in the Black Panthers. Come on, you don't get no cooler than that. Giants, spiritual giants. And there was something so simple about these 12 steps, 12 traditions, and 12 concepts of service. Is whatever you're doing taking you closer to a drink or further away from a drink? Sydney, how you treat people says absolutely nothing about you or them. It only tells us what you believe about God. Sydney, you cannot locate the will of God by being in the past or the future. God, life force, only exists right here, right now. Sydney, suffering, if it didn't kill you, sweetheart, it wasn't meant to. Can you sit down with us and find out what the lesson is? If it didn't kill you, it wasn't meant to. You know, I have some questions for you, and one of them is, are you done yet? Are you done? Are you? And that may look like drinking. Drinking is a symptom, so that's not the are you done yet. Are you done with self-pity, self-obsession, self-consumption, your opinions, your politics, your preferences? See, my life started to work here when I got so honest sitting down with someone like Ralph or Kent or Leslie or Tarek. They didn't like me, I didn't like them, but they had a life of power, peace, and purpose, and I did not. I did not. You know, I feel like we prop ourselves so long, we won't get help in here. I had to go to them and say, I don't know how to live. I sure didn't know how to live as Sydney, but I didn't know how to live. And they began to say to me, hey, would you be willing to let go? But check it out, let go. Turn it over, let go, and leave it with God. Most of the stuff you're suffering on, most of the stuff that takes you out if you went out, is the shit we turned over, let go, but we won't leave it. And it starts to eat at us, right? In the morning, you wake up, you can be washing dishes, and all of a sudden you hear that conversation again. You can be out doing some gardening, and all of a sudden you're like, you hear something. You ever have that thing you think, and you just, like, you ate too much salt? You did your approach. You talked to your sponsor. You've 10-stepped on it. You've done the 14-day prayer. You run service. You're doing all this stuff, and you just can't keep it let go. You know, and I have learned, for me, you know, I didn't need anyone to help me understand step one. I was an alcoholic. I knew I was. I saw that when I drank, things slid to the left. I saw that my relationship with cocaine, Dexatrim, and tequila, and a couple of other things had me, you know, it was getting worse, never better. I saw that, you know. But it was, I was hung up on the dash, and my life was unmanageable. I didn't know that unmanageability was something that I took with me everywhere I went because I was trying to live my life on my way, my thoughts, my sentiments, my opinion. You know, there's so much to discuss. You know, alcoholism is a subtle, cunning foe. I hear people say, oh, my, you know, disease is in the other room doing push-ups. No, it's not. Don't need to do no push-ups. Wipe us all right out right here. Stop. It is cunning, baffling, and all-powerful. It has me living against the values of my people. It has me living against an instinct of self-preservation. It has me annihilating sweet things. You know, it wasn't that people didn't love me. It's just I couldn't feel it. So when Tarek says that this is a retreat of the language of the heart, and he talked about us being dismembered and flung in all different areas, you know, psychically, emotionally, spiritually, of the world, you know, shattered, annihilated, and that we come here to remember, to be put back. You know, you guys, for me, there is a single one most important word in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know what that word is? We. This is about belonging. This is about connection. This is about being returned to a state that is not intoxication, that is not sprung out on resentment and self-pity and anxiousness and depression. It is about clearing out the transmitter and the receiver to be connected. Connected to God, connected to nature, connected to each other, connected to myself. Oh, my goodness. The cat stopped talking about alcohol and drinking on what page? On what page does he stop? Tarek, you need to teach these people something. He talks about it on 44. He goes down mid 44, top of 45. He says drinking. And for the next 164 pages in there, he doesn't talk about it anymore. So what does that mean? What does that mean if he's not talking to me about drinking and alcohol? It's my comportment, it's my behavior, it's how I treat others and myself that is the problem. But where does that come from? It comes from my thinking. My thinking dictates my actions. My words translate my thoughts. Have you ever sat down in your morning meditation and not gotten crazy with yourself, but just sit down with a pen and a piece of paper and just cold-blooded? Just write out as fast as you can every single thing you're thinking. As fast as you can. I did that once. And I saw how much negativity, violence, conflict, confrontation, resentment. And I thought, baby girl, how are you going to win? How are you going to win? And I was 20 some odd years sober when I did that. See, there's a way the old timers used to talk about an onion, and that's layers, layers. You ain't doing nothing wrong that you feel like you need to go through the work again. Calling you higher. Sometimes we need a new experience. Maybe that sponsor you got for 12 years, love them, but need to go to somebody who makes you a little uncomfortable, but damn, you like what they're doing. We don't belong to each other here. We don't possess each other. This thing for me has been about freedom, power, peace, and effectiveness. And I don't care how good y'all like me here. This don't matter. It's what my mama thinks about me. It's how I drive. That fine thing that was sitting here next to me, it's what he says to you about me. It's what he says to you about me that matters. His kids, my neighbors. See, I fucked off my life unwittingly. So now that I'm here, I got to get on the line. Got to put me on the clock. And I'm okay with that. You know? My father died in my first year. I was 19 years old. My father was the cat who I loved the most, and I know he loved me. And he was a failure as a father, as a husband, as a son. He was a mess. When we talk about this program as love, I'm that person. I am that person, yes. But we have to understand some stuff about love, y'all. It don't always feel good. And we can love some people who's hurt us badly, but that doesn't mean we're dysfunctional. That's not what that means. You know, I loved my father, and I couldn't walk across the street with him. And he loved me, and I couldn't get what I needed because of that. I didn't get the protection I needed or anything else. So those inventories are so great. The fourth step for me, I remember Dan Sherman said to me one time, you know, Sid, I'll be so happy when you get your fourth step. He says, the fourth step is not going to show you who you are. It's meant to show you who you're not. Liberation. I wasn't all those things. There's a gentler, kinder, attentive, more beautiful speech about you and what you're trying to do through your relationship with alcohol and cocaine than you can even know. I wasn't a good girl gone bad. That's not who I was. I love it that the old timers used to call this a soul sickness and a mental illness. I wish we still said that. I was sick. I was sick. Right? So, what happened? Right? I'm supposed to tell you what happened. My stories could not and would not die. If I could manage and time my blackouts, you'd have a very different speaker. I drank for oblivion. I did not drink to fit in. I did not drink to have a good time. I drank, and the reality and the pain of my existence got right here at my peripheral vision, and that was good enough. So when you all asked me, Sid, do you want to be free or do you want relief? Your girl said relief. You had to tell me that freedom was possible for me. Fran is the woman who revolutionized my sobriety, and she was. I was 19 years sober. I had come back from living in France for 11 years. I had this incredible life. I had the bells, the whistles, the this, the that. And this is a disease of loneliness that I have always cured by isolation. And I have cured by isolation drinking and being high. I have cured by isolation staying sore, torn up, burned up, full of resentment, peeling the paint off the walls when I come in. And I have been suffering from isolation and loneliness through accomplishment. See, when these men were talking about, you know, we're like people who have lost their leg, we're like men, women who've lost their legs, they never grow new ones. I thought I was gonna work on my upper body strength. I thought I was going to be like little Tink Tink and get some prostheses and go in the Special Olympics. I thought I was going to run a race and somehow I was going to get the belonging, the protection, the safety, and I was going to be seen. And they told me, Sid, you have no legs. And I'm like, no, not me. Not me. Watch me. Watch me. And I stayed out there a long time on the other side of the world, slanging, slaying, knocking it out. Man, you ever have French drawers, French shoes, and a French haircut, and French perfume? You don't know. You better ask somebody. That was it. Pop, pop. You know, first class coming home. Ha, ha. Woo. And my grand, you know, and my mother said, girl, do they have McDonald's over there? I'd be like, okay. You know, didn't care about nothing I was doing. So this is a disease of loneliness and all its manifestations that I keep trying to cure by isolation. And so when Fran, I told her that I didn't know how to live and can you show me how to live? She says, I can show you what's in this book. I was 19 years sober, Fran had 8. And she worked with Mark Houston and blew his mind. And that's who took me through the work. And she was cold-blooded. She was cold-blooded. And I went to her house and we were talking. And the first time I went there, she asked me, Sydney, were you being dishonest with yourself and others? Isn't that a cool question? Just bam, right out the gate. Woo, Sydney, were you being dishonest with yourself and others? Sydney, are you willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol and cocaine? Can I tell you how tender and loving this program is that 19, 20 some odd years later, we don't know what that any lengths is. That's a beautiful thing, right? We just meet it right as it comes, right? And she said, Sydney, do you really want to live? And I looked down and she goes, oh, you're one of those. She says, okay. She says, well, thanks so much for coming by. She got my stuff together. She got up. She started taking me towards the door. And she said, hey, she says, when you decide when you want to live, please come back. Be my privilege to help you. But it's too heartbreaking trying to help people like you who don't know if they want to live or not. And she put me out on her front porch and she said, as she was closing the door, and by the way, Sydney, it's only an alcoholic that believes that they're the final word on what the value of their life is. Shut the door. Dignity of my own experience, dignity of my choice was beautiful. I came back to her that next following week. And she sat me down and she said, you know, Sydney, she said, you're special. She says, you are really very special. She said, you know, you're like those turtles that they talk about in these huge spiritual things, you know. She says, they go down for so long. They're down there doing their thing. And she says, and you know, months, years, they come to the top. And she says, and they take a breath. And she says, but you're even more special than that. She says, you're the ones that as you take a breath, your head pierces this circle, this golden circle, this ring. And she says, there's something about you that will be able to heal people that I won't even be able to touch. There's something about you and your story that AA and the world need. And she says, but you will never know unless you get free and let God have all of you, good and the bad. And I got to sit there, and you know what question I asked her? How do you know that? See, this is the thing about being young and being an alcoholic and an addict, and this is the thing about not getting that attention and interest early. Right? So there have been a million wonderful experiences that have brought her words to more clear reality. And I want to say each of you, those of you who raised your hand, and those of you who are just sitting here, you know, there is somebody that only you are going to reach. Somebody needs your story. And it doesn't have to be here in this format. You know, when I found myself in San Quentin talking to folks about how to do time and how to help each other stay sober, or helping women come home from prison to reunite with their kids and helping them get a job, there was a cat. I lived in a house in the hood, and I really loved this house. It was a 1904 Craftsman. It was just a jewel. And the gardens were beautiful, and everything was beautiful. And I was that house that the dope heads and everybody would come by and drink, because it was just beautiful, right? And this one cat, he was a big time, you know, gangbanger, and he was messed up. And he was a fallen down dope head, and he would drop down in my yard, and I would go out and give him, you know, something to eat and some water and some stuff to clean him up. And I'd say, "Hey, babe, you ready? You done yet?" "No, Miss Sydney, not yet." I said, "You let me know when you're ready." I said, "I got some men who love you. They love you, and they're waiting for you." I had gone on a panel a year or so later, and this big old strapping dude came up to me. I mean, teeth as big as this book, just smiling and grinning. And I was speaking on a panel, and you know, he was coming out from the crowd, and I mean, I'm used to people reacting, so I was cool. I was like, and he goes, "Miss Sydney, it's me, it's me." And he was 11 months sober, you know, working as a tech. Interest and attention. He said, "You told me I could do it." You know? Sometimes we're the only big book people will see. I was talking to one of your beloveds, and we were talking about women in AA, and, you know, harsh, whatever. It's so cool to have a clear, precise, unafraid message. You know, and sometimes as a woman, you know, it's like, the most important thing I've learned to do is ask a question. See, this program to me has been about inquiry. The connection, the belonging, the we is in the questions. Am I an alcoholic? Have I drank beyond my mental control? Can I manage and control my cocaine use? Am I a prey to misery and depression? Can I make a life? Right? You know all the questions. Do I owe an amends? What are those ones that we go to bed and retire at night? Have I helped anybody? Do I owe an amends? What have I packed into the stream of life? Right? It is through inquiry that liberation can happen, and a steady focus on the questions of spiritual maturity. This is about spiritual maturity, right? Ursula helped my mother get sober. Ursula and my mother went to grade school together. And Ursula didn't have any children, and my brother and I went in and out of her house as my mother was dealing with her alcoholism. I live in Ursula's house today. And Ursula got diagnosed with lung cancer, bone cancer, breast cancer. And it says that we will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. It will say that we will be able to count on our intuition. The disease centers in my mind. The reason for all the work, the reason for the service, the prayer, the self-examination, the 10th steps, the inventory, it's not about the narrative. It's about getting free. It's about getting clear. What is it that I suffer from? Am I powerless over alcohol? And how does unmanageability still manifest? And can I offer God that unmanageability to do with as God will, so that I can be of maximum service, right? Because it's about comportment. It's about behavior. That's always what it's about. And that centers in my thinking. And these ways that we live and come together in unity and service and help each other and pick up the phone and do all that stuff, that's not it either. You know what that stuff is? that helps my mind relax and open and soften so God can get me. Right? This is a lifestyle. So there was this one morning I saw she had some stuff. Her behavior had changed. Of course, I didn't know she was this sick. But I said to her, I'm going to go with you to the doctor. She goes, oh, I don't need you to. I said, yeah, cool. And so I came to her house. I had a key to her house the day of the appointment. I put on the coffee. I got her paper out of the driveway. I brought it in. She wasn't even awake yet. She smelled the coffee. She says, oh, you're here. I said, yeah. I said, you know, I don't have to go with you. I don't have to go in, but I want to drive you. And so I drive and we go. I said, hey, I got my books. I got my computer. I'm just going to sit here. And she goes, oh, come on up. So I come up and they call her name. I say, hey, you go in, I'll sit right out here. She goes, just come in. They announced that she had 4 months to live. Now, here it is, the most beautiful demonstration of every single thing you all have taught me. Attention and interest. How to be of service. Right? When folks are dying, when folks are hurting, when folks are in such great suffering, what I have learned is they lead the dance. They lead the dance. And in that decentering of my feelings, decentering my preferences, decentering my personality, I don't have to center how I feel. She's the one who's dying. The magnitude of the miracle of healing in her life as a result of my presence and accompanying her through that was absolutely radiant. I was bathing her one time. A nurse had hurt her real badly, burned her seriously. I'm standing in the shower trying to bathe her. She looks up at me and she says, how do you always know what to do? And I said, I just listen. I just listen. What I can tell you about alcoholism and untreated alcoholism is that I'm rigid and tight when I'm not living as best as I can in the sunlight of the Spirit, remembering that God is God and I'm the drunk. I don't want to expand upon this thing and make it so difficult that it's hard for me to get to. This is a life for me of prayer, self-examination, and service. And I have learned the more I set my politics aside, the more I set my preferences aside, the more I set my personality to the side, I have had deep connection, deep belonging, deep community beyond my wildest, drunken, child hurt-filled dreams. Isn't that the irony of this thing? I want you guys to take a moment, look at each other. Just look at each other. I see you. I'm interested in you. We are walking the highest spiritual program together. And I need you. I need you to stay awake, alive, and engaged in this process of recovery. And it keeps growing, right? I love you. Take care.